My initials are Charles Robert Douglas. And all my friends call me Dougie. And the thing was, the very first parade at Sandhurst is a naming parade. And the guard's sergeant major came round. Now, come on, it's typical of the way. Come on, you, what's your name? See? So I told him, Gray, and he said, no, what else have you got? You know, rudely like that. So I said, Douglas. And he said, oh, well, all right, have it your own way then. Douglas, you kind of, so I said, yes. And after that, that was picked up by my pals, and they all said, oh, you're Dougie. And so I lived through the army as Dougie Gray.
Dougie, why did you, you went to Sandhurst.
Yes.
Why did you choose the Indian Army?
I chose the Indian Army because I was very keen on riding and horses. And this was a question of sort of free riding, you see. In point of fact, it's rather extraordinary. There were 21 regiments of Indian cavalry. 21 of them. And each of them had 450 horses. Each of them. And, of course, it meant there's an awful lot of polo, because polo, in fact, was one of our weapons. And we had, officers had swords, and the men had lances. But generally speaking, it was the horse that was our way of getting about. And we all played polo.
And polo was a wonderful method of training you in riding, I suppose.
Exactly, exactly. In other words, we had to have weapons and a means of getting about.
And when you joined the Indian Army, you were telling me a story just now of how you were formed up in front of the colonel. Could you tell us that story?
Well, yes. Oh, yes. George Haynes, his name was, the adjutant, and he said, now, you go in, follow with me, we'll take you in and introduce you to the colonel. And I expected to meet a rather crusty old man. In point of fact, he was absolutely charming. He wasn't in uniform. He was wearing a blue silk shirt. And we started talking. And do you ride? And I said, yes, and all that. And I rather threw one in. I said, I've ridden in a point-to-point, sir. Oh, you have your rest. He said, but why are you all in this clubber? Why are you all dressed up in uniform? He said, it's not necessary, you know. I think you'd better go back and put on something comfortable, like I've got on, he said. And I did just that, and I went back and changed and came back, and he said, now we'll have a little sherry together. Do you like sherry? You do. Good, so do I. This is the sort of conversation. My first meeting of an Indian cavalry colonel.
Wonderful.
Yes, and he was absolutely charming. His name was Weatherall. And he then said, we'll put you in this recruit's ride. It's always a done thing here. The officers have to go through it like the men. You will join the recruit's ride. And there was a smirking from one of the instructors, more or less sort of saying, let me have him. And so I changed and went back and chatted away to the colonel. And he told Dariyar Singh, his name was Dariyar Singh, that this was his. A new officer coming. He'll be in your ride. You understand? Dariyar said, yes, I understand, sir. And I was amazed because all the horses were bareback. There were no saddles or nothing. And consequently, we all fell off many times. But this was part of the instruction, really. Anyway.
But did Dariyar sing?
Dariyar was rather smirking and laughing and put us all on bareback. And made us jump around and everything like that. And, of course, we fell off many times. And eventually, one day, he said, big day tomorrow, you're going to get saddles. And we all sort of, oh, thank God for that. When the horses arrived, bareback, he said, big day tomorrow, Saab, you're going to have stirrups. And I thought this was wonderful to progress from bareback to stirrups. And So it went on, and one was concentrated riding all the time.
But isn't it true to say that when your first, he said, saddles, the saddle arrived, you were rather surprised, weren't you?
Yes, I was. He said, tomorrow you'll get the saddles. And we thought that was wonderful. And when the horses came in with saddles on, they had no stirrups.
So that was almost worse. This
was another trial. Could I ride without stirrups? And so it went on. And eventually, of course, I'm not a natural ball games player. I don't play billiards or anything like that. But I was really fond of anything to do with horses. I loved.
Was it harder riding with a saddle without stirrups than bareback? It seems to me.
Oh well, yes, it was. But we soon got the trick of it all.
Did the Ritteldown Major sort of pick you out as an officer against the recruits and say, I'm going to give this guy a hard time?
No, and he didn't, but the ride instructor did, Dariar Singh, who was a wonderful chap, Dariar. And so it went on, and eventually we were into good enough for play in a tournament. I can't remember if we won it or not, but anyway.
Was the men you were with, all your men must have been wonderful riders, weren't they?
They were by the time they got as far as I was getting. I mean, we were all riding pretty well, yes. And fell off many times, too.
Now, you won something called a Kada Cup. Can you tell me about what the Kada Cup was and how you came to win it as the youngest officer ever, I believe?
Well, the Kada Cup was nothing more nor less than hunting wild boars on horseback with a spear. And wild boars didn't like being chased around. And they'd come at you, bang, bang, like that. And there were a lot of falls. And it was quite exciting. But once a year, there was a competition, pig-sticking. And we had a village would produce beaters for pittance. And they came along and shooed out the boars from the crops and things. They were very glad to have people chasing the boars away from their crops. And once a year, they had this competition. And the competition was who was the first to spear the boar. And my horse was a very good horse indeed. And his name was Granite because he was a grey horse. And dear old Granite took me up alongside this very big boar, which I speared. And the spearing of it won me the Carter Cup. And I got pictures of it, of course, here.
Was the... we must see that in a minute. Wasn't pig-sticking rather a dangerous sport?
It was certainly dangerous, and many, many pig-sticking men, officers and things like others, they got hurt from falls. Once or twice, boars would turn on them, and a wild boar is quite a something.
Did you ever have an attack?
I had many a fall.
But did you have an attack by a wild boar ever?
No, I wasn't attacked, but the thing was that if you came off, try and get back on your horse again. Because if you expose yourself to a wild boar who had himself been exposed to being chased and prodded at and that sort of thing, and you had to get first spear, if you could. And the winner of the Carter Cup was the chap who got his first spear.
So when you fell off, you had to get back on pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
Otherwise you might be gored.
And were gored sometimes.
But you were never gored?
No, I wasn't.
Now, obviously, horses were... are we all right, Daphne?
I couldn't move the clock for it. Couldn't work out where the ticking was coming from.
What's the matter?
The clock ticking is going on the tape. A bit,
oh. You know.
But we're all right, are we?
Yes. Okay. I haven't stopped sleeping.
In those days when you were riding a lot and playing polo and that sort of thing, what was the sort of military aim of the regiment? What were you doing in military terms?
to be pretty good on a horse, you had to do that. To be pretty good with a weapon, you had to be able to use a spear. Both my spears are outside behind your chair now.
Yes, I've seen them. Yes, they're fine spears.
Yeah, and you were, I think you're leading. So did we do any work as well?
Well, no. That could be right, Dougie. Yeah, did
you? The answer was, of course, we had to learn the language. And you didn't wet. I mean, there were some people who were hopeless at languages. I was quite good, actually. I say that simply because I rather enjoyed it. And the men enjoyed chatting Urdu to me.
But beyond the work of learning language, that sort of thing, was there a what were you being trained for, basically?
Oh, yes, we were trained to be cavalry officers. And about every 3 or 4 years, we found ourselves posted to the frontier. And the frontier meant taking on frontier people.
Yeah, Dougie, you've got your hand in front of your...
Boom.
Yes. So the main thing was, were you posted to the frontier?
Oh, yes, frontier.
Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing there?
Well, frontier people, the men all around the Khyber Pass and that sort of thing. They were always trying to blow up trains or rob this and do that. And they were tough, horrible people, we thought. And we had to fight them if they fought us.
Did you have fights with them?
Well, fights, yes. I mean, we got shot at and we shot back.
And your main role was patrolling, was it? Is that
yes, we were certainly patrolling wherever the civil element said, look, there's people forming up and they're going to have an attack. And we had to sort of forestall that. That's sort of what it was.
So you went out on your horses?
Yes.
Yes. And can you describe what it was like going on a patrol? Can you remember that?
Well, you jolly well had to take on the enemy, which enemy seems ridiculous with tribesmen, but they were enemy. We were fighting to survive, and they were fighting to survive. And on the frontier in India, it was fairly tough. And of course, eventually it all crumbled because we were into the war.
Apart from the frontier, that was your main terrain of operation. Did you know of any other area you might have operated, deserts or anywhere?
Well, we had to learn mechanization, because we all realized that that was what we were eventually going to do, to fight a war, and you had machinery, so to speak. There's no good taking on people are armed with rifles, if only you've got a spear. And so we definitely were fighting the tribesmen, if ever they were a nuisance to the civil.
When was your regiment mechanized?
Yes.
When was it mechanized? Can you remember which year?
Just before the war.
Just before the war. So you must have been on the last parade, were you? A horse parade in your regiment?
Pretty well, yes, we were. It was rather sad. There was the colonel, whose name was Broadfoot at the time. And the very, very last time, he said, Skinner's horse, by the right, fall out. And that was the end of it all.
How did you feel?
Well, I was went on pig sticking.
How did you personally take to mechanization? You can't love a tank very much.
Well, it's rather funny. The colonel, he said, well, we've got to get some vehicles to practice on. And he went off to the bazaar and he literally bought a passenger lorry of some sort and made his men take it to pieces and put it together again, pretty well like that. That's how we learned, by the hard way of getting hold of vehicles and literally learning on those vehicles. Some men failed, and one or two deaths occurred. Chaps went over the cud. Cud is the word for pass.
Yes. went over the side of the pass.
Yes.
So the army didn't provide you with any equipment to learn to be mechanized with.
How do you mean equipment?
I mean, the army didn't provide you with any vehicles.
All the men had rifles.
Yeah. No, what I mean is the army didn't provide you with any vehicles or to learn how to...
Oh, yes, they did. We thought they were rather broken down. Tanks came up from some temporary regiment. And the war was coming off, you see, and we knew that we were going to the war. And so we were jolly glad then to be armoured, as they said.
When you left for North Africa, what was the state of the regiment then? Had you really had any proper training in tanks or armor?
Only the officers who were prepared to let their own cars be used, this kind of thing. No, it was pretty poor, really, I thought. And it wasn't until we really got to the scene of the operations in the war in Africa that we realized that we'd got to get down to it. And it was, mechanization meant that you knew how to drive a car and all that and how to teach other people to do it. That was what it was all about. And I remember one funny thing did occur when we were being mechanized and the colonel... lost his temper once because he said someone's lost a sword and someone else has been kicked and the parade is very bad, boat Karab. And that was a sort of shame that we went to the war rather untrained, we thought. But we soon learned.
Now, this fascinates me, Dougie. How did you transfer yourself from this very... untrained regiment into a regiment actually in the theatre of war where you could take part in this very modern and very serious fight?
It was rather funny. The result of a major came to the colonel and said that these men of ours, they need more practice. And he said, we heard a rumour in the regiment that we were going to the war. And the unfortunate thing was that I had got dysentery at the time, a little bit. In other words, I was slightly ill. And I was responsible for loading the troop train. And in fact, it was rather a failure because the men, without me there knowing what to do, they just loaded the ammunition trucks. But they put all the ammunition down one end. I wouldn't have allowed that, but they did. And, of course, the wretched train was stuck. And the colonel was absolutely furious about this. And so we did our best.
Why was the train stuck?
Beg your pardon?
Why was the train stuck?
The train was stuck because, of course, all the ammunition was on one end. And that... train, that particular ammunition truck, got stuck because it couldn't go.
Overloaded. Too much weight in it.
Yeah. However, we got over that one. We got over problems the whole time. But the Sardar Major, one of his men, went in and said, look, this is happening and our men are not sufficiently well trained. However, the colonel said, they soon will be. We'll do this, we'll do that. And he gave us a bit of stick until we became quite good at going to the war.
But when you arrived in North Africa, you were still not in a very well-trained condition. And you hadn't had the equipment and that sort of thing to learn.
That is exactly right.
Yeah.
But we soon learned.
How much time did you have to learn before you were actually involved in the war?
About a couple of months.
It's wonderful, isn't it, that you could transfer...
Well, we borrowed chaps from the tank corps who came along and helped us.
What did they think of you? Did they think you were a pretty eccentric lot, or...?
No, I don't think so. I think they were amused. They were amused.
Then how did you... Can you tell us a bit about about the North African campaign and your role in it?
Well, there was one big battle in which we were involved, and that was a place called Keren. And Keren was a place where the Italians were forming up. It was Italian troops and German, but a mixture then of Italian only. And they needed instructors, which we borrowed from the tank corps. And we got on quite well. We thought we would probably be attacked by submarines, but it didn't happen. Keren was the great big battle area in Abyssinia.
I just got a cough on that. I just have a little lever to stop me coughing.
Got some water?
No, that's fine. Thanks. That'll stop it. So, Dougie, can you?
I suppose you could say, if truth be known, that we were pretty badly trained, really. Badly trained because we didn't. The so-called instructors were no better than the men they were teaching. And that's. But we very soon, when we got to the war, we realised that what being shot at meant. Two or three of us were wounded a little bit.
In the Battle of Keren, were you actively taking?
Oh, that was a really battling show. That was we're taking on the Italians, and they had all the equipment and everything like that because they were in their own country, weren't they? You see.
And how did you fare in that battle, as a regiment?
It wasn't just the regiment. We did pretty well because we were doing reconnaissance work and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, the British force knocked hell out of the Italian force. And we won the Battle of Keren, if you like to call it that.
And you were doing reconnaissance mainly?
Yes, yes.
Did, at any time during the North African campaign, did you think that it was all over?
Did I what?
Did you ever think that it was all over, that you wouldn't ever be able to stop?
No, not at all, because, of course, in North Africa, the big campaign was on there, much more than we have in Keren. But, yes, I suppose you could say that we were not well enough trained, I think.
For the battle. Mm. Where did you go after Abyssinia?
Eventually the regiment in Mesopotamia. They went there for a bit. And then they were sent to Italy itself. We joined in at Naples. And various sort of reconnaissances and all that went on. And we weren't, I don't think, in retrospect, sufficiently well trained to take on a modern war, but we did.
Were you mainly in reconnaissance throughout the war?
Yes, because we were a cavalry regiment, and that was the thing.
And did you have tanks or armoured cars?
We had armoured cars to start with, so we were really would have been better if we'd been in tanks, but they hadn't got the tanks, or what they did have presumably was sent up north from Cairo.
Were there any, during your times in Italy and in Mesopotamia and things, were there any occasions you particularly remember, any battles or anything that you particularly remember?
No, I personally didn't. Well, I say remember them. I mean, we were there taking part, but there was no great clash of arms, if I suggest you're aiming at. We didn't, unfortunately, go up north and fight the battles from Cairo onwards.
When you look back on the record of the Indian Cavalry, because, of course, you have been involved with the Indian Cavalry Association for many, many years, a leading figure in it.
Yes.
When you look back on the record of the Indian Cavalry during the war, it is a pretty remarkable record, isn't it? When you look back...
Yes.
Overall, on the record of all the Indian cavalry regiments during the war, it was a pretty remarkable record, wasn't it?
Remarkable is a very dangerous word. I think we would pretty good because we had some first-class soldiers. They were trained men as cavalrymen to start with, and then we changed from them to vehicles, and those vehicles eventually were changed for tanks. But by that time, the war was at its teetering. It was the end, and the Germans had come in, you see. And when the German army came in, then change for us was tremendous. Skinner's horse, I think you could say, did pretty well. We didn't disgrace ourselves in any way, but it would have been more fun. Fun is a wrong word in war, but it would have been better if we had been better trained, I think, myself.
Now, what happened to you after the war?
What happened to me? Well, like all the other British officers, we had to try and get some form of occupation, preferably with money. And I thought, well, I know about horses, and I've ridden a lot and all that sort of thing. And so I said to my wife, not Helene, my first wife, you followed along, followed the drum. You need a little bit of a rest and a hurry. Let us enjoy ourselves for a week in London, which we did. And after about 4 days, Joan was her name, she said, "Look, I don't know about this. We were staying in carriages," which was a way of spending some spare money. And she said, "I see in the paper the Newmarket sales are on. Let's go down there. We'll leave this hotel now." So we went down to Newmarket, where I met some friends who I knew in the horse world, pointer pointing, that kind of thing. And what was it?
You were talking about?
Yes.
What did
I do?
Yeah. Yes.
And I was introduced at the bar, a delightful Newmarket trainer, typical sort of Newmarket trainer. His name was Peter Thrale. And he said, "What are you doing, young man?" And I told him what I was looking for, a job. He said, "That's very funny." He said, "Because I've just got a new client called David Wills, who's just bought a stud farm in Newmarket, and I'm looking for someone to manage it." I said, "Don't look any further." I said, "I'm here. I'm..." And that's how I started. And eventually, I was able to buy my own stud. And so that's how we started, really.
Do you think, you said earlier that you were all thrown out. Do you think that the Indian Army officers were very badly treated after the war?
Badly treated. Badly is an awkward word, isn't it? No, I don't think so. I don't think we were badly treated, but we didn't get a big enough thank you, a cash thank you, than we felt we deserved. And a lot of people, a lot of our officers got other jobs, business jobs and that sort of thing, insurance and everything.
But why would they not absorb you into the British Army? Didn't you resent that?
Why didn't they absorb us? I think, compared to the British Army, by that time they were pretty well mechanized, you see. And we weren't. We weren't properly recognized as we should have been. We very quickly learned, mind you.
But did you not feel at the time that you should have been offered a chance to stay on in the army after the war?
Well, we weren't. As far as I was concerned, no one came up to me and said, "We want you for a job." I had to look after myself.
And how did you feel about that?
Well, it was fairly tough, really, living with not enough money. That's what it really came down to.
And you didn't, you weren't annoyed or angry that no one said, "Come and join us"?
No, I don't think we were anger. We realised we were, those of us who were young enough to keep going and did well, we went on doing well. Just like simple as that.
When you were going right back to when you joined the Indian Army, at that stage, did you think it would be a career for a lifetime?
Oh, yes. When I eventually left Sandhurst, when I eventually joined the Indian Army, I thought then I was going to be there for some time. But it didn't work that way.
Do you had no thought that India might become independent when you first joined the Army?
Yes, but then the trouble was, well, that you knew, Sikhs versus, not Sikhs, but Hindus versus Muslims. But not in my regiment. They were first class. They buckled down to it. Mohammedans particularly, they were jolly good.
What happened in your regiment when partition was announced? Were you still in the regiment then?
No, by that time I was home and dried in Newmarket.
So you left before independence?
Yes.
In your association with the Indian Cavalry, have you been to Pakistan and seen your Punjabi Muslims?
4 or 5 times, yes. I got a lot of photos here.
And how do they feel about it?
The men?
About the split in the regiment.
Oh, well, they became Christians versus... You see, I mean, we had to take on the regiment, of which the division was religion. And that was very difficult for British officers. Mm. And, of course, it all, again, showed the value of keeping on that wonderful church, St. James's Church.
Yes, yes.
Which was a marvellous... Marvellous organisation, really.
Yes, yes. One thing particular, Dougie, happened in your career. Did it distress you or did it distress your men? And that was the mutiny in the Central Indian Horse.
That was a very, very badly run thing. Unfortunately, 2 or 3 of their officers had been chosen to stay behind because they were good polo players. But they weren't very good soldiers, I don't think, at that time. I hope they won't hear me say that. Well, I suppose they got to, but I think that we could have done better if we'd had more training.
But the Central Indian Horse itself, did that have a bad reputation as a regiment?
Well, I had so many friends in the CIH, as we call it, CIH, so I wouldn't say anything to denigrate them, but they had a difficult time.
Did that have any impact on your men and on your officers when you heard that a cavalry regiment had mutinied?
No, but luckily our men and our British officers, they were a friendly organisation. And all I can say is that... we didn't have a mutiny, and they did.
Fine, great, good, good. Now, some more, slightly more general things, Dougie. Do you think there's anything more particular you want to
be there?
No, wonderful. Dougie, you know the 14th Army, and in a way the whole Indian Army, is often spoken of as the forgotten army. And I...
Oh, but now, not at all, not far from being forgotten. I mean, they're very proud of the Muslims in Pakistan and the Hindus in India. They didn't fight each other. And that was largely, I think, because of the paternal care of the British officers who were left behind a little bit. And we loved those men. And I think they loved us too.
But I'm talking now about in Britain, the way that Britain now has concentrated so much of its remembering of the last World War on D-Day and Dunkirk and the war in Europe. Do you feel that the Indian Army has been properly remembered and honoured for its role during the Second World War? In this country I'm talking about, not in...
Honoured is a difficult word, isn't it? One doesn't expect soldierings to be like that, I don't think. You mean decorations?
No, I just mean people's acknowledgement in the media and in other things like
that.
Oh,
well, of course. Terrible things did go on behind the scenes, the Hindus versus Muslims. But they got over it. They did.
Hmm.
But it was a question of religion being brought into a financial situation, and it was difficult with that.
Politics.
Yes, politics, exactly.
Mm, yes. One or two very last questions, really, for the moment, anyhow, unless there's anything you want to say. When did Indian officers come into your regiment?
When they came into the regiment?
Yes.
Which, you mean Hindus or Muslims?
No, I mean officers.
A British officer?
Yeah, no. You were
the Indian officers.
Indian officers.
Well, they had to do what their political people wanted them to do. In other words, you couldn't be a renegade Muslim.
No, I was talking about something slightly different, Dougie. When you joined your regiment,
way back now, yes.
Yeah, presumably no Indian officers were there then.
Oh yes, there were.
Even when you joined?
Oh, yes.
Not VCOs, but King's Commission.
I'm talking about VCOs.
No.
There were one or two exceptional boys whose fathers were rather big political people who said, take my son, you know.
And how did they settle in the regiment?
Oh, they were delightful people. But they were very anglicized. Absolutely. Very anglicized. Shaukat Hayat. His father was prime minister in Pakistan, so he was home and dried, you see.
Well, that's wonderful, I think. Any anecdotes which you feel sum up the spirit of your regiment, the spirit of the army, any stories you'd like to tell us, which I haven't got out of you yet?
Oh, well, revert perhaps back to when the ammunition had all been wrongly stored and things like that. And there were all the goodbyes and the tears and all that. The damn train didn't start. And the colonel sent for the station master and said, what's the matter? And the fellow said, they'll have to reload the whole of this carriage. And the colonel said, bloody hell, is there anywhere we can hide? And he says, well, round, if we can do it 1 mile down, we go, the line bends round, and if we can get on there, we'll hide ourselves, which we probably did. And the reason for the trouble was that the colonel, thinking that we weren't very good at marching and everything like that, he had apparently borrowed a band from a British regiment, a 66th Rifles, who happened to be stationed in Rawalpindi. And he'd said to the bandmaster, would you play us out off to the war? And the bandmaster apparently didn't quite realize what he was wanted. And he made his band play it too slowly. We suddenly found ourselves going to the war, marching there like Chelsea pensioners. And they apologized to the colonel. He said, I don't care what the hell happened, but get this effing train out. We went to the war like that.
So there was a certain amount of chaos about it all.
And amusement, which was the right thing. Tears were not necessary at the time. We were all anxious to get it all over with and send the women back home again.
Any other stories like that? That's a wonderful story. Get that effing train out of here.
You mean about the war itself?
Any time when you were with the regiment. I mean, like riding, did you have any classic tumbles? Or?
Well, me, I came home at Waverley Station in Edinburgh. My father, who was more ecstatic to see me than I imagined. And he said, I've got a surprise for you. Your Aunt Mary, his sister, has died and left you £2,000. What are you going to do with it? And I said, my dear dad, I said, you're asking a British officer who rides, what he's going to do with this money. I'm going to buy a horse, a racehorse, and I'm going to ride it. Which I did. And the trainer said, look, this is quite a nice horse, you know. Who is going to ride it? I said, I'm going to ride it. He said, but this horse is entered for the Grand National. And I said, well, all right. And so there is the horse. Yeah. And I rode him in the Grand National. But unfortunately, I got knocked over by a loose horse at Beecher's Brook. You ever heard of Beecher's Brook?
Yes, indeed. Yes, 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 yes.
Well,
right. My God.
And
was this when you were still in the army?
No, mm-hmm. I'd left then. I was with Peter Thrale then.
Oh, you were with Peter Thrale.
And he had said to me, look, this is quite a nice horse, but don't take it away from me. I'll go on training it for you. But who's going to ride it? I said, I'm going to ride it. He said, but you can't ride it. Would you be going in for the Grand National? I said, I'm going to ride it, and I did.
Was it terrifying?
No, it wasn't terrifying, but my mother had never been to a race or horse ever. I had said, well, as I cantered down to the post, I'll wave my stick at you, which I did. And my mother started jumping around. There he is, that sort of thing. And a tough old bloke standing on the stand near my mother said, ma'am, you seem very interested. Have you got anything on him? And my mother, I had to live with it afterwards. She said, have you got anything on him? Only my son. that's the funny story for the graves was enough, really.
Yes.
I had to live that down for a long time.
So this, you were still in the army. It's 1938.
Yes.
Yeah, so he was still in the army.
Well, I was a pensioner by then.
Hmm?
I was a pensioner by then.
It says the Grand National, 1938.
That was the date of the Grand National.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you would have still been in the army then?
No, no.
Hmm.
I was on leave.
On leave, yes. Yes. Great. Now, where should we...
for the moment.
Yeah. So, any more stories?
I don't know what sort of stories you're after.
Anything which is about your experience, the regiment, during your army time. Any big, as you used to say, cock-ups which occurred apart from the train, or any entertaining incidents in the mess or anything like that? I mean, if there aren't...
One could make things up, but I wouldn't do that.
No, we don't want you to make anything
no,
at
no,
all.
No,
and,
no.
And if you don't have any more, don't worry. But if you do, it'll be good to hear them.
Well, as soon as the war was over and I was on leave.
Yes.
And I had to go back to the regiment, you see. I had spent 3 years in Burma as ADC to the governor beforehand. But that doesn't come into this story.
That was during beforehand.
Yes. But I loved India. I still love India. I've got wonderful pictures of them and things like that. And I think that the British officer, if he really tried, became enormously fond of his men. I was. I thought they were wonderful chaps and still correspond with them. I've been out 2 or 3 times. The last trip, I took 27 British officers out with me, and British officers and their families, and they loved India too.
That's wonderful. I think that's great. Should we see through some of Dougie's photos? Would that be a good idea?
And then their mule stories,
aren't they? Oh, yes. Oh, no, one thing, yes, sir. Vanessa's very keen on, and we're very keen on any stories about mules.
About mules?
Yes. You must have had mules for transport, didn't you?
No.
You didn't?
No, not that I know. No, the infantry did, but we were cavalrymen.
Mm.
If we had things to be carried, we carried it on a horse. Mm.
Did you have a big, when you moved out, did you have a big train of people like Dersies and cooks and civilian camp followers when you moved
out? Oh, they'll do anything for money. They need money to live with, and they were, if a chap was a good consama, consama's the word for chef. If they were good consamas, they were sought after. Any officer's mess wanted to get hold of a good cook.
And he would travel with the regiment wherever.
Oh, yes, absolutely, very much.
Perhaps you could do a day in the life of the regiment.
Yes, yes, that would be a good thing, yes. What would have been a day in the life of your regiment, or you as an officer, after you'd done your riding training and all that?
Well, in the early morning, we were out riding and hacking about and training our men and ticking them off if they fell off or something like that. It was a disciplined regiment, disciplined.
Did you do much office work?
As little as possible. As little as possible. But relating to the language, yes. Because I, for what it's worth, and I'm not showing off, I'm just stating a fact, I learned Urdu fairly quickly and enjoyed chatting with men if they were on leave and things like that, going and shooting with them and that sort of thing. They were wonderful fellows. Both the Pakistanis and the Indians.
Did you visit the villages where you're
recruited from? Oh, yes, many
times.
Yes, certainly did. I used to do that. Go and chat them up and talk to them. And if they ever visited the regiment, which they often did, came back from... They were all agricultural people, after all. They had to grow crops and things like that. But when they were in their villages, oh, do come and see our Saab and all that. And so we did.
So, in a way, a much closer relationship.
Oh, very, very close relationship.
But in some ways, the relationship between you and your men must have been closer than the relationship between a British officer and British men in a regiment.
I suppose it was, yes. Yes, I suppose it was. I can only speak personally that I thought the Indian soldiers were magnificent, whether they were Pakistan or Hindu. Mind you, terrible things went on. Train left Simla and didn't reach Delhi and that kind of thing.
But that wasn't in the army, that was the civilians.
Yes, exactly. Mm. I knew it. And that's a Carter Cup.
Mm. Just one second. Hold a second.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is you, Dougie, in full uniform.
Yes.
It's a pretty elaborate uniform, isn't
Yellow.
It? Yellow. Yellow and elaborate.
I'll show you the pictures of it.
Yes.
This was me here, and all these chaps won the Carter Cup.
This is you with all the other winners of the Carter Cup for pig sticking.
Written down there.
Yes, yes. You're far, far younger than any of the others, aren't you?
I was. These are oldish men.
Yes. Now, here we are. Can I just have a look?
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, yes, I'll have a look. Yeah.
There's the frontier of India. That's the Viceroy's bodyguard. All in cavalry. Delhi.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
You've probably seen that.
Yes, yes. Yes, I've seen that, yes. Yeah, yes. And just
I'm perfectly happy to let you have the book. And you
no, but Dougie, we're not happy to take it. Because it's very precious to you. And should... You know what the post is like nowadays?
Mm.
You can't rely on the post. Are there any pictures of you pig sticking? Yeah?
Oh, yes. But there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the officer's mess.
Yes.
Well, that's...
pictures of you doing pig sticking, something like that. Here's a good one to talk about.
Yes.
So here you are, Dougie. This one's you.
That's for the colour of the uniform.
Yes.
And that was my horse, the one that got a cup.
This is Granite.
Mm.
And he was obviously as firm as a rock.
Mm, he's a wonderful horse. Wonderful horse. Never fell in three years pig sticking. He never fell once.
Goodness me. And you, did you, pig sticking must have been pretty terrifying, wasn't it?
It was not terrifying. It was a sort of, I'll get there first sort of thing. It was a fighting. We were fighting an enemy, which was a wild boar.
Quite a dangerous enemy.
I suppose so.
Now, there's a picture here, Dougie, of you in your full ceremonial uniform.
Yes.
When you were the ADC to the governor of Burma.
Yes.
For someone who loved riding and...
No, unfortunately he wasn't. He didn't ride at all, so ever.
So was it rather boring for you being an ADC?
No, I was doing a job. I was... entertaining his guests, you might have been one of them. And, you know, look after this chap, you know, he's rather influential.
But wasn't that rather boring compared to
no,
the
No,
no,
it was great fun, and I had to organise this, and dance was on, and see that the girl's got a partner and all that. Well, typical ADC suck-up.
And this is an incredibly ornate uniform, isn't it?
Well, you see the colour of it.
Yes, this is black and white, and there's the colour. Good heavens. Gosh, it's a great, long, sort of canary yellow jacket.
It was called a kurta.
A kurta, yes.
You speak Hindi.
Mujhe malum hai kurta kya
hai.
Kurta is a long shirt.
Pura lambai means yes. full length.
Right down to the knees.
Yes.
Sort of tunic, right down to the knees, canary yellow.
It was called a kurta.
Kurta, yes.
Which is an Indian word for coat.
Yes.
That's the mesket.
That's very bright yellow as well, isn't it?
That's the mesket we wore.
Yes. So, now this is a small jacket.
Yes.
Like a waistcoat.
Embroidered, yes.
And it's embroidered on the front here.
Yes.
With black and yellow.
Yes.
Obviously, sort of canary yellow was the regimental colour, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
And here... Just going back to this uniform again, here's the uniform which you would have worn, which was bright canary yellow.
Yes, same as that.
Coming right down to the knees.
Yes.
A sort of tunic, which you call a kurta.
Yes.
Black riding boots.
Yes.
Did you have spurs as well?
Yes, of course.
You had spurs at the back.
And white breeches.
And white breeches.
And white gauntlets.
And white gauntlets. And this very elaborate...
Pugri.
Pugri. Now, could you tie your own pugri?
I learned to tie my own, because it was the easiest thing to do, really, once you've got the hang of it. But you can always get someone to put it on like a bowler hat. Tie it on their heads, but I didn't. I tied that myself.
How long did it take to tie it?
Oh, you're just doing this sort of thing. In the mirror and all that... You see the eyes, it's straight, you know.
Presumably, on parade, you had to get your pugri exactly right, didn't you? Wear it.
Well, but that wasn't difficult. If you didn't do it, someone would laugh at it. Bloody hell, what time did you get out of the bed? a lot of leg pulling in this game.
That's wonderful. And there you are in your full uniform there. Yes. Yes. Great photo. And many of these are of your return?
This was taken, that was the Royal Tournament in London.
Were you involved in the Royal Tournament?
Only getting seats for the Indians.
And here's Prince Charles talking to...
The commander
President's bodyguard.
Now you're riding a horse with your left hand.
Now wait, one second, Dougie. One second. So in the hall of Dougie's house is the very spear... with which he won that legendary Kada Cup. Now, Dougie, what do I do with this spear?
Well, you're riding it now with your right hand in the point of balance.
Yes, yes.
But you obviously got to go farther forward than the point of balance. So therefore you do that by bringing your right hand backwards there. That gives you another foot.
I see. So I'm riding along like this with my hand
And do it all in one.
suddenly I see a pig.
Yes.
And I can do it all in one like that. And boom! Oh, yes. Got it.
That's it.
Oh, dear.
Let's do another one.
One more. Dougie, you've got to do it once again, I'm afraid. The microphone came off, unfortunately.
Well, watch me do it.
Mm. No, don't want...
I'm writing here. Mm. Like that, you see? There's a pig. I do that.
Stab.
Yeah.
Now, let me try it, shall I?
Yes, go on.
So, I have my hand here, yes, yes. Somewhere near
you're
the
you're riding a horse with your left hand. Yes.
Left hand here with the reins.
Yes.
And suddenly I see a pig.
Yes.
Back like that and stab. Yes. Got it.
Got it.
Gosh, I didn't know that I'd been able to do that. I think I'd have been turned the other way and run if I'd seen a pig.
And there you are. That was a little fun.
Mm. Definitely. I'll ask you, what did you see of the last cavalry charge?
No, you believe that, extraordinary to relate, the Italians were able to mount
the cavalry charge.
A cavalry charge, yes, against their enemy, which was my squadron.
Yes, certainly. Mm. Although it was armoured.
Your regiment.
Yeah, your regiment. Mm. I believe it's...
Tell me when you're starting.
Yes, I'm now going to ask a question now. I believe extraordinary to tell that the Italians in Abyssinia were able to mount a cavalry charge on your very regiment.
Well, that is absolutely true. What actually happened was that the Italians, unknown to us, had been recruiting their local soldiers, putting them on horses, etc., and using them to charge against, or rather to attack, any enemy, which in their case was the British, in the Indian Army. And this did actually occur. We were in a position when suddenly said, Christ, look at this. And in came a posse. You can call them a posse if you like. Of Italian-trained native troops with lances and the whole caboose. And they charged us. Two or three people were wounded. One or two of ours were, I think, dead. And our squadron commander, whose chap was called Denzel Holder, Major Denzel Holder, he lost an eye, poor chap. And these Italians came thundering in towards us. And we were, in fact, receiving an enemy cavalry charge. And there were we, a Bengal Lancer regiment, if ever there was one, Skinner's Horse, were being charged by an Italian force.
And you were in your...
And I saw it all happen. And they soon, when they realized that they were facing a regular unit, they buggered off. I don't know what happened to them.
Did you shoot any of them down? Or
no, no, no. I don't think so. They may have done, but not for where I was. But I was present and saw a cavalry charge against an Indian cavalry regiment, which must have been rather unique.
So, Dougie, tell us about the actual, the cavalry charged on you. Where were you? Were you facing that direction? Which direction were you facing? What happened?
To our astonishment, being an ex-cavalry regiment on horses, we suddenly realised that we were being charged by native Italian-trained native troops. What's the matter?
You weren't on horses then, not in Cairn.
No, he said ex-cavalry.
But he wasn't on a horse. He said we were on horses, and he wasn't on a horse. They were with their tanks.
I don't think you'd better...
Darling, you weren't on a horse then.
I think... So what happened, Dougie, then?
Well, what happened, we then realised that... which we had known a little bit about, the Italians had recruited men who rode, and they actually bravely charged the Indian troops, of which I was one of the officers. The damage done to them was terrible, because we had guns, real guns, which immediately swung their barrels round in a circle so that they faced the enemy and loosed off, bang, bang, right into these Italian cavalry chaps riding horses. And many horses anyway were killed or were seriously wounded, and I and another officer with me, whose name was Dudley Hamilton, we went round and had to destroy the Italian horses which had been seriously wounded.
That must be very sad.
It was really rather an awful thing for cavalrymen to shoot down cavalrymen, but that's exactly what happened.
And years later, didn't you? You met the Italian officer.
Well, that was an extraordinary thing. The old man, Amadeo, wrote a book, and in it he described what the charge was like on them. And he then got the publishers of this book to find me and got me out to describe what happened, which I did. And the Italians, I've gone astray.
Yes. Can you
yeah, go back to many years later. I read an account of the cavalry charge officer was mentioned in an account in the paper, and I realized that he had been fighting me. And eventually I discovered it was Amadeo Ghie, and we went out and we met. I think that is the nitty-gritty. Yes.
And the old man, he wasn't an old man, invited us both, my wife and myself, to stay with him in Italy, which we did. Not in Italy.
Ireland.
In Ireland. Can you cut that out?
Yeah.
In Ireland. And it was fascinating because we then went over the charge exactly as he saw it, he experienced it, and I told him what we saw and what we did and what we experienced. And we became great friends, and we still do exchange Christmas cards.
Wonderful.